Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
Hi, and I'm Noah Richman.
And we are here to discuss two of the Welcome to the Blumhouse features that are on Amazon Prime right now. Black Box and The Lie were released on Amazon Prime on October 6th. And these adventures into compact storytelling, standalone movies, I appreciate them. I'm getting kind of tired of, you know, stretching things out into like 13 chapter franchises.
Right.
But these, I think, if I remember correctly, The Lie is actually a remake, but Black Box is an original story.
Interesting. Do you have any idea what the Lie was supposed to have been a remake of?
The Lie is a remake of, I believe, a Swedish film called We Are Monsters, Mir Monsters, or something like that. I think it's Swedish. I don't remember, but it's definitely a remake. And now I'm curious to see the original, just to see if they did anything different. But we're going to dive into Black Box first, because there are some very intriguing story choices in that one, not to mention some extremely creepy, creepy, creepy effects. So, Noah, what are your thoughts on Black Box?
On Black Box. Okay. Well, first thing I'm going to say with Black Box, I really like the way that they portrayed the characters. I found something about the characters to just be engaging. Like, it did a very good job of creating a world with people that were easy to relate to and easy to care about. It seemed like they found some pretty solid actors for the roles. But I have to say that the thing I liked most about Black Box is it managed to throw I could kind of tell watching it, like, I think there's going to be a twist. I think there's going to be some kind of a twist in what's going on here. But they actually managed to throw one in that I didn't see coming. I really liked the way that they did that. I thought that it was clever. I thought there was a lot about it that was well done. The thing that was difficult for me about Black Box is I felt like it had a lot of downtime. The amount of story that was in there that really engaged me was matched by an equal amount of what just felt like filler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So my critique about Black Box is I thought that for me, it seemed like something like this would have made a great Black Mirror episode. It would have been like a good 45, 50 minute, something like that. But at an hour and 40 minutes, I thought that they padded it out too much. There was a lot of time that I just found myself sitting there just saying, okay, move it along already.
Well, to give people a quick synopsis so they can follow our, shall we say, positive and negative observations. In Black Box, a man loses his memory and his wife in a traffic accident, and he's a single father now who's subjected himself to an experimental treatment to try to regain his memories, and shenanigans ensue. <It's> the best way to describe it. I thought the story was very intriguing. Felicia Rashad plays the doctor doing the brain experiments on our main character, Nolan. And she actually was the twist. I saw there were two twists. I saw neither of them coming, and the twist with her behavior shocked me more than the other twist, which we won't spoil here. Seeing her character turn made me go, "Oh my God, what is she doing?" And I appreciated that immensely. I agree with you that some of the sequences the were felt like they were extended unnecessarily. I think this movie could have easily cut 10, 15 minutes and been so much more intense before it because of it. And yeah, the performances in this one came off as real. And there's really no way to describe this without
Without spoiling.
spoiling it. But the personalities that the main actor embodied were so well done. So well done. And I have to give a particularly just joyful shout out to whoever is the sound designer, because some of the effects of the creature in the dreamscape were absolutely gut-wrenching. And the soundtrack is so cool. The soundtrack just sits there and messes with the back of your mind, the hairs on the back of your neck. I looked it up. The guy who was doing the body effects in the dreamscape is one of the characters from the Imagine Dragons music video, Thunder, the ones who have like hyper flexibility and they're just doing all sorts of weird things. He was one of those guys. But yeah, I liked Black Box, except for the fact that some parts of it were stretched out. I think we should have seen Nolan's friend, the other doctor, more, because he drove the investigation into wanting his friend to recover, be the father he was before the accident, and he had the scientific know-how, the medical know-how to uncover that something was going on here that he couldn't put his finger on. And I really, really enjoyed that.
So one thing that for me I'm a little bit mixed on, and again this is difficult to discuss without giving a spoiler, but I'm a little on the fence. I agree that they came up with like that they did the sound well and that they really did come up with a pretty creepy creature, but at the same time, when all is revealed, is there a reason for it to have been so twisted and creepy as the creature appears in the dreamscape?
Yes. I'm gonna try to explain my perspective again without spoiling too much. I viewed the creature, the I is it really a creature though? It's a fragment, as the residual part of the personalities that were fighting each other, as a way to come up with a physical manifestation of that struggle that was only in his brain. I think it was pretty well executed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that, and at the same time, to me, it's a little weird that that's the way it manifested, is this kind of spidery humanoid form.
If you remember back how, again, trying to avoid spoilers, how how both characters met their demises, it kind of makes sense a little bit. It wasn't connected as clearly as it should have been because they only showed the one scene at the, in the one of the crucial points, the one scene of the guy falling down the stairs, but you didn't really get a clear view of that until the end when you saw what really happened. And that's where I think the crunching and the twisting came from. Because the other guy was also in a car accident. It was implied that it was a violent collision. It damaged him. It almost killed him. It did kill his wife. And in a collision that heinous, you're gonna get ragdolled. That's what a lot of the spinal and brain trauma comes from. It's from your body snapping around in a high speed collision like that. So that's where I imagined they latched onto that from. I'm not sure it was connected as clearly with the main character as it was the other character.
Yeah, I think that's I guess I had sort of thought about that as well. I guess you do. You certainly have a point, and it was something I had thought about. To me, it still seems a little strange that that's the way that it manifests. But I'm willing to, I'm willing to give some give on that. The other thing, though, that for me is, I guess, a question mark on really all of these films that are being shown as part of the Welcome to the Blumhouse the series is, it seems like they're releasing them in October because you're trying to release some sort of, creepy movies for Halloween, and nothing that I've seen really says Halloween to me the way a Blumhouse film like Insidious or Paranormal Activity or something where it's like a creepy ghost story. Black Box, like, it's got that one creepy image, but other than that, it's really a straight sci-fi story. I mean, I didn't, despite having that creepiness, I didn't come away from that movie feeling like, oh man, that was wow, that was a creepy thing to watch for Halloween. I kind of came out of it thinking like, okay, I'll repeat myself, that would have made a pretty decent episode for Black Mirror to have done.
I see what you're saying, 'cause that they're definitely not something that would be a headline feature on Shudder. And maybe that's the point. Blumhouse is producing, I mean, this is actually specifically called, I mean, this is a joint production between Blumhouse Television and Amazon Studios. So maybe Amazon went to Blumhouse and said, "We'd like you to add some more original content, please." And Blumhouse said, "Well, we have these stories that we could make at your studios that aren't quite, they don't quite fit the known label of Blumhouse, but we'll put our name on it because they are still kind of on that edge of,
Right.
suspense and horror. So maybe that's what they're going for. Because I think if you had turned Black Box in a slightly different way, I don't know if do you remember Tales from the Hood?
vaguely,
Right. Do
yeah.
you remember the sequence where the one doctor was trying to de-violence incorrigible criminals? You make a couple of tweaks in Black Box, you've got that episode almost. And actually, to be fair, some of what they did in Black Box reminded me of Get Out.
I could see that.
And so, but it's not as creepy or not as gory or as terrifying, but it's on that edge of suspense with a little bit of minor league terror thrown in. And that's probably what makes it great for Amazon Studios. It doesn't jump that line into, okay, we can only put this on Shudder. That's my assumption. Until I find somebody who I can talk to about it and say and ask them that question, that's my theory. I'm sticking with it. So what?
It would be interesting to hear, some kind of official party line of what we're doing with Welcome to the Blumhouse that might be different than, what we do with the Blumhouse theatrical release, or different from
It's
what Blumhouse
definitely,
has been doing with Hulu,
yeah, it's definitely not in the category of Paranormal Activity or The Conjuring or anything like that.
Right, exactly.
So where would you rate Black Box?
Well, for me, it's a middle ground. The content that was there that spoke to me, I really appreciated and I really liked. But I think, for myself, the amount of it that felt like downtime, really detracted from my overall enjoyment of it. And so because of that, by the time it was over, I was really happy for it to be over.
Oh no.
And so because of that, I can't give it as good of a rating as I would really like to give it, because I feel like what they did right was really well done and really right on. But I just have to come back to, to me, I can't really give it anything more than a kind of middling ground, because there was so much filler that I felt like I was sitting through that was just felt like wasted space.
Yeah, I agree. I personally would give it like 3 out of 5, just because it probably would have been a little bit higher because how long it took to get to the ending allowed you to catch your breath, to recover from the heightened tension of the other things that were going on. And that if they had just managed to string that tension all the way through to the end, it probably would have been 3.5, maybe four, maybe four. Just because of the music, just because of the music. The music was awesome. Now the next movie that came out this week is called The Lie. Says when their teenage daughter confesses to impulsively killing her best friend, two desperate parents attempt to cover up the horrific crime, leading them into a complicated web of lies and deception. Now, this was written and directed by Veena Sood, and I meant to go look up what else she had done because I know for a fact I have seen something else that she did, and I just went, whoa. So I'm going to do that now.
So I did look her up, and the main thing that jumped out at me, and I'm afraid I haven't watched it myself, but I know there was a lot of critical acclaim for The Killing, and she was the main writer on that show.
Interesting. She was an executive producer and story editor on that TV series Cold Case.
And that one I'm not familiar with.
It's kind of like it's definitely police procedural. It's focused on a group of detectives in Philadelphia who solve cold cases. And it's the big thing that stood out was whatever case they were working was underscored by music from that era. So if they were working on a cold case murder from the 70s, all the music would be 70s. If they were working on something from the 80s, it'd be all 80s. And it just went back and forth like that. It's probably one of the reasons why that show isn't in reruns, because they ran into like a Miami Vice situation with music rights. That's what I'm guessing. That is what I'm guessing.
Interesting.
Yes. But yeah, here it is. The Lie came out in 2018. It's a remake of the 2015 German film We Monsters.
Okay.
And yeah, so your thoughts on
My
The
thoughts on
Lie?
this one. Okay. Well, this one I thought did a of the two films, I thought this one did a better job of staying tense and capturing my interest up front and then holding it, having some sense of building the suspense as you see this situation where these parents are grappling with what to do, and the choices that they make just keep wrapping them further and further and further into this bind that they, the more that they're trying to cover up, and the more they're trying to protect, hide things and protect their daughter, the tighter of a web that they wind up weaving around themselves. I liked the way that it had a lot of the elements of a classic thriller, just the way that it was shot and the way that it was kind of just stripped down and had that sense of a situation that just kept building and spiraling more and more out of control. I also, they brought on some A-list actors. Certainly Sarsgaard is somebody who's pretty well known. And again, I just thought that they did a good job of portraying the whole situation. My issues with it were, first of all, the fact that they called it The Lie, to me was just putting a huge spoiler right in the title of the film. Because they gave it that name, I guessed what was coming, like, way miles before the reveal.
Yep, that one unfortunately was too easy to figure out. I don't know if they really thought that through, because when you get to the point where the parents are starting to create a story, you wonder if they were focusing on that as the lie. But the daughter's story, it wasn't actually her story, it was the reaction afterwards. She recovered too quickly, and when especially the next day where she's like not affected at all. At what point does a parent say, okay, she's either in some serious shock or my child is a bona fide sociopath and she needs to be locked away.
And what you just said, you are now getting into the other complaint that I had about it, which was, I felt going into it like it did a good job of like having a classic thriller and building suspense, and you could kind of feel for these people and you could kind of see how they were, how they were torn about and confused about what to do. But again, as the situation goes further and further, at some point, it just starts to feel like, really, people? Like, you don't know better than what you're doing right now.
Especially given that the mother was a former
Yes,
prosecutor who is in
exactly.
corporate law. You could say that she was panicked because this is her child. She doesn't want her child's life ruined. She doesn't want everything she has spent her life building for her and her family to come crashing down. I can understand that. But at what point? I mean, this is a woman who's had practiced as a prosecutor who has experience talking with witnesses, with criminals. You can either her emotional distress was had her so overwhelmed she didn't stop to think to question her daughter like a criminal. Did she just not want to do that because she didn't want her daughter to think that she wouldn't support her? At some point, yeah, the dad I can get. He's a
Right.
total, space case. I mean, he's in his 40s and he's still playing in a garage band. Okay, so
Right.
but the mom, especially when her coworker starts questioning the story, she should have stopped to think about what was happening instead of going full on panic mode and making her lives worse. Now, that said, I think we both pretty much saw that first twist with what the daughter was doing. The second twist, I did not see that coming at all. At all. I'm like, oh my God, they went there. And yes, I'm talking about the hit and run.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, did not see that. Did not anticipate that in any way, shape, or form. And the cause and consequences of that make everything so, so much more tense.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I definitely felt like it was a thriller and it was suspenseful, and I was kind of wrapped up in what was going on. By the time that was happening, it just felt like it had just become so awful. And I will certainly give it this, that of the films I've watched so far in this series, this is the only one where I woke up the next day and still kind of felt it lingering with me, like, oh God, that was brutal. That was just so awful.
Yeah, that one's a little relentless in ramping up the pressure. And
Yeah.
that, like I said, that last double twist at the end, you're like, oh man.
Yeah. And again, I will also come back to what I was originally saying about this really being done well with, that they had some A-list actors and they pulled it off, where you just kind of felt that in your gut, like, oh boy, I feel for all these people. This is just such a terrible situation.
Yeah, that was a never-ending cascade of poor life choices. Oh my goodness. But like I said, it did a better job of maintaining the tension and ratcheting it up every now and then throughout the movie all the way to the end. And there's really no catharsis there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that what I would say with my overall thoughts with The Lie, because I think we've pretty well summed it up so far. Mm-hmm. The one other thing that for me was a little hard to let go of was I had fairly recently seen the movie Caliber, which is a film that's available to stream on Netflix. And Caliber was another film about normal everyday people. And this one, it's, you know, the two guys who are out hunting and they accidentally shoot somebody's child and kill them while they're trying to shoot a deer. You know, so that's another one where you can kind of feel for everybody in that situation, and you can kind of understand how these people make the stupid decision to try and cover it up and hide the body, and you know, and then the situation escalates and spirals out of control. And the thing is at the end of it, I just felt like I've already seen a film that did this, and I thought did it better. So I also had, it may not be The Lie's fault that I have that comparison in my head, but I had already seen something this done similarly of, you know, trying to cover up this murder and things just getting worse and worse as the protagonists try to avoid having to come forward and explain what happened. And I did think that the other one was a more solid, you know, did it better and was a more solid overall film. And so for me, The Lie also had that against it.
Okay. So where would you rate this one?
I'd give it about 3 out of 5. I would say it's not a waste of time. If it's something that is interesting to you and intriguing to you, I wouldn't say, oh yeah, you know, stay away from this one. But I do have the issue that they really should have gone with a different title. I do have the issue that I think it just goes a little too far to the point where it's some of what they're doing is just so overboard. With, you know, the mother and the being a prosecutor and really being in a position where she should know better, where at some point it's just like, okay, well, I don't know. It's hard for me to sit here and really empathize.
Yeah, there's a moment where she should have been a little bit more critical, but showing in her in full-blown panic mode, I guess her fight, flight, or freeze mechanism was overriding her prosecutorial instincts, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand that. And truth is stranger than fiction. It could be that this is what could happen. But nevertheless, for me, it just detracted from my engagement in the story. And it's another one where by the time it was over, I was ready for it to be over.
Gotcha.
And also, instead of coming away from it being like, oof, wow, that was intense. That was a well done film. I kind of came away from like, oh God, I'm just glad that's done.
I wonder what would have happened if they had kept the original title of We Monsters.
That would have been much better.
Cool. Well, next week we will be back to talk about the other two movies in this first round of Welcome to the Blumhouse. The movies are Evil Eye and Nocturne, which will be released on Tuesday, October 13th. So you guys can check them out before we talk about them next week. Noah, thank you so much for diving into this mini exam with me.
Well, thank you very much, Summer. It's good to talk to you again.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
So stay tuned to next week's episode. Next Wednesday, our another special episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. Noah and I will be talking about the other two Blumhouse films coming out next week and give like an overall evaluation of these films because they are very different from the type of horror story we've come to expect from Blumhouse. So I'm curious where these are going. And so we have these four movies now. We have four more coming out in 2021 to complete the first Welcome to the Blumhouse chapter of films made in collaboration with Amazon Studios. But it's nice to have something that isn't quite as gory as most of the films you'd see with Blumhouse, with Shudder. Every now and then, a nice psychological thriller is just the thing you need. Little bit of tension, little bit of scare, it's all good. Well, what do you think about the different level of suspense thriller tales coming your way? Let us know. The number to call is 602-635-6976, or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let everyone know that you are enjoying this podcast, and maybe, just maybe, they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi, and yes, I will get into a conversation or a debate or a geeky argument with you about sci-fi, space opera, horror, thrillers, action movies, even. Come on by. Create a new bright spot in the dumpster fire. That is Twitter. And you can also check out our videos over on YouTube, youtube.com/sliceofsci-fi. In addition to the reviews posted there, we also have a new curated list, creators and creatives, different interviews from authors, comic book writers, screenwriters, playwrights, everyone who's writing the stories that we enjoy. I've pulled them from various providers all over YouTube, so you can enjoy as well. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, weigh in on some of the interviews you've heard, on some of the reviews we have crafted for you. It's all a fun place to share your enthusiasm for the various genres we all adore. So come on by. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support our efforts here. Your donations through PayPal, your pledges through Patreon really do help keep all of these bits and bytes flowing. So thank you. Thank you all. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier. You will become eligible for a perk. Every month I pick a winner out of the hat, and that winner gets to choose between a book, an advanced copy, a Blu-ray, a DVD, a 4K even every now and then. So come on by, check things out, and help support all of our efforts here with all of the podcasts and the websites. Slice of Sci-Fi, Writers After Dark, Babylon Podcast, Charlie Jade, even the old Different Point of View and Dragon Page. All of those are still online, and your support helps keep that data flowing. And if a monthly pledge is not something you can commit to right now, use the PayPal link once a year, four times a year, whatever you can spare in support of it here. We appreciate every nickel you can provide, honestly, truly. For everyone who's currently supporting, my thanks to you. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi this weekend. Take care.